You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this is being recorded on the 10th of September, 2024. This is entitled, Kyiv is Dying, at least in part because it deals with the failed mobilization of Europe against an imaginary Russian threat. A few weeks ago, I dealt with the Kursk disaster. Of course, it's always worse than I say it is. But it took about a week for the results of that to finally show themselves. There's pictures and video out there of just dozens and dozens of NATO vehicles, air defense systems, tanks, and depots of ammunition and flames. Because of that, much of this, by the way, you paid for, whether you're in the U.S. or Europe. Kyiv sent around 11,000 men entirely against civilian centers. There's not much military going on there. Under NATO's guidance, specifically the U.K. And as any idiot would know, it failed miserably. Apparently, Zelensky used what was left of his men. There are no reserves. Allegedly, Polish soldiers, regulars, were being used, and a large number of mercenaries that you also paid for. Yet even with this, the regime demands more blood, showing a level of fanaticism that was nowhere to be found during the so-called Cold War. Now, from the Russian side, General Alaudino made it clear that the purpose of this gamble was to, at most, secure a strong position for any upcoming negotiations. I have trouble believing that. It's hard to imagine a stupider or more naive strategy. The Kyiv regime is out of everything. Over just 2 days, Kyiv lost 2,000 men, and that number grows continually. Loudenov also says, and doesn't take a genius, that the total victory is close at hand. Of course, the surrender will be kind of like it was in Afghanistan. It'll be camouflaged. The media will call it a victory of some kind. But this latest humiliation is a bad one. Either the West will pull back like normal people would do, but they are abnormal, so it's very possible that they will lash out further. And that's part of what we're talking about here today. Russia's territory has been invaded under NATO control, which is an example of it lashing out more with even greater irrationality. Now, Russia's retaliation can at least morally be entirely unrestrained. It's unsure whether or not NATO's going to have more attacks on Russian territory for the rest of this year, but Washington is today getting away with murder, literally. It's depressing to see how step by step the regime has been crossing one red line after another with civilians and civilian infrastructure as the main target. Many of you, especially if you listen to me, you've seen how this progresses. To be very simplistic about it, the U.S. and the EU blatantly and openly engaged in interference in Ukrainian politics, including overthrowing its leadership. That was then projected onto Russia as Russiagate. NATO weapons were sent to Ukraine. NATO troops were sent to train its proxy army that it did not need and that it could not afford. Kiev's terror attacks against civilian infrastructure, which is the very definition of terrorism, became the norm. The F-16 debacle, despite not having many pilots for them. That NATO trained the Kievan forces in these weapons targeting Russian civilian centers. The U.S. ordering Europe to empty its military and ammunition stores. NATO troops sent into Russian territories. The permission of openly terrorist attack from Belgorod to Crimea. Then NATO using weapons to attack Russian civilians and NATO troops attempting to take over an entire Russian region. That's a very summary list. And if the Soviet Union still exists, this would be attacked by the entire world. Russian response was very small, about 1,000 men, 24 armored vehicles and tanks, and that was sufficient to mop up what was left of this force. At the same time, she's advancing in the Donbas, which of course is Russian-speaking, finally defending them from these cowardly attacks on a civilian population over the last decade, killing about 18,000. So on her own territory, Russia is receiving NATO attacks. NATO was involved with communications, logistics, command, albeit a broken and bleeding one. Over 35 countries have invested hundreds of billions in money that they didn't have to supply Ukraine with weapons to carry out what can only be called terrorist attacks. Whether it be mercenaries or NATO soldiers that they call mercenaries. And the point of it all is to come down to the realization that this is not a minor conflict like the one in Georgia in 2008. This is far worse than anything that occurred in the Cold War. Even in Vietnam, no one was talking about attacking the Soviet Union directly. Such fanaticism wouldn't have been dreamed of in the 60s and 70s. NATO is trying to create an army in Eastern Europe to directly wage war on Russia directly. Now, this is impossible. The difficulties are extreme. I mean, manpower issues, since no one wants to die for the regime, as well as endless supply problems, let alone the total lack of money or political will. There is the possibility that NATO forces may attack Belarus, which would be a huge mistake from their point of view. And it shows that compared to the Cold War was not a war whatsoever. And I've said this before, but Vladimir Putin miscalculated. Being a civilized man, he didn't realize just how irrational the regime was. Crossing these red lines is completely uncivilized, but since they've been crossed over and over again, it shows the weakness of the system, not Russia. It shows the weakness of the U.S. and Europe. Dmitry Medvedev, the former president, said that Russia now should not hold back. In fact, he said, from this moment, the special military operation should become openly extraterritorial in nature. We can and should go further into what still exists as Ukraine, to Odessa, Kharkov, Nikolaev, and elsewhere, to Kiev and even farther. There should be no restrictions on us in terms of borders. I can't disagree. But the fault here, the blame rests on the regime, in the Western world. They started this by overthrowing several Ukrainian governments and building a very large and absolutely unnecessary army on Ukrainian territory. It's conceivable that Putin is waiting for worse things to develop, having a strong response in store for them, one that's now obviously justified. The regime is doing on Russian territory is a violent provocation against civilians. Russia has a military capacity to wipe out Western political and military centers, its financial hubs. with their superior weaponry, these ultra-precise hypersonic nuclear weapons, which could keep the loss of life to a minimum, but completely disabling Western power structures. And if it happens, only the regime itself is to blame. Now, there's another issue that's come up over the last week, I guess maybe a little bit more. Zelensky, as he becomes more and more unhinged, and that's, we've talked about that before, is demanding things that often don't make sense. But the issue that's arisen is the demand that Poland, among other places, that Poland should begin shooting down Russian missiles heading to Ukraine. That would be a declaration of war. That would be direct intervention. And that would change everything. The Polish foreign minister said, not that long ago, he said it to the Financial Times, summer 2024, Radek Sikorski, is the foreign minister, and he said this: membership in NATO does not trump each country's responsibility for the protection of its own airspace. It is our own constitutional duty. I'm personally of the view that when hostile missiles are on the course of entering our airspace, it would be legitimate self-defense to strike them down. Because once they do cross into our airspace, the risk of debris injuring someone is significant. Okay, that's a stupid statement. The foreign ministry clarified that these were, as Sikorski himself stated, his own personal views and don't reflect Poland's policies. And he just repeated, Paweł Rączki actually is the spokesman's name, who said, well, this is just the minister's personal opinion. But the minister himself said so. He says, I'm personally of the view. So the response was unnecessary, but it does suggest Poland's divisions. And I'm not saying these ideas won't be adopted and that they will pretend. I don't think they have the capacity. I don't think they have. I don't think air defense ammunition is left in Central Europe. But they still may be adopted, despite having been rejected in the past. Zelensky, once in a while, pretends to be sane, and I mean that not as an insult. And Zelensky said that he thought Poland didn't want to be alone in this decision, but if they had the support of other countries in NATO, then Romania, and he points them out, may be able to join them, making the Poles feel better. Well, the Deputy Secretary of NATO, Mircea Giona, also said to the Financial Times, no country will make these decisions on Russian missiles individually. I have not seen any supporters of making this decision in NATO. I'm not surprised that Zelensky would appeal for this, because that's his way. But our way is to make decisions in line with the interest of the Polish state, and that is what we are saying today. Of course, the Americans only understand the interests of its own oligarchy, and the Poles and the Romanians are very much aware of this. Now, it just so happens that the Deputy Secretary of NATO is a Romanian, but here's what their foreign ministry said in response to Zelensky. We have to do whatever we can to help Ukraine and do whatever we can to avoid escalation. And this is where the line of NATO is consistent from the very beginning of the war. Of course, we respect every ally's sovereign right to deliver national security, but within NATO, we always consult before going into something that could have consequences for all of us. And our Polish allies have always been impeccable in consulting inside the alliance. Of course, he didn't say consulting on what or why anyone would care what Poland had to say, except in this case, where they are have a border with Ukraine. But these words show that really no one in Poland or Romania is seriously interested in shooting down Russian missiles over another country. They don't have the capacity, nor do they have the political will. I don't think they have the equipment. But Sikorski coming out and saying, despite he modified it saying it's his own personal opinion, saying that we should do this, the foreign minister, he was pretty sure it wasn't going to go anywhere. But I think there may be a few reasons why he said what he said in public. Now, there was a security pact signed this summer that said with Poland and Ukraine, that we'll continue our bilateral dialogue and dialogues with other partners in NATO, aimed at examining rationale and feasibility of possible intercepting in Ukraine's airspace, missiles, and UAVs fired in the direction of the territory of Poland, following necessary procedures agreed by the states and organizations involved. This is a lot of verbiage to say very little, because they don't even say that they're going to do it. But of course, Zelensky's going to read whatever he wants to. But that kind of rhetoric isn't going to do anything. It also implies, though, if this is true, and that's why Sikorsky said what he said, it implies that they're aware that Ukrainian elites are on the verge of mental breakdown, and they have to be placated. They have to be dealt with like that, using these kinds of words. He also may have been trying to craft a story that, well, there's plenty of people in Poland who are on board with this stupid decision, or option, I should say, but they're being restrained by rival politicians, even the Americans, to deflect criticism from themselves. Sikorsky himself has deep ties to the regime, and he is a proud, albeit very sudden, Ukrainophile. Maybe he thinks that this rhetoric serves Polish interests to exaggerate its willingness to do whatever they can for Kiev as it collapses. So I'm not really sure what Sikorsky would give a damn with a discredited world leader whose presidential term has run out and who was installed by the West and who's in the process of coming apart. Now, there is another aspect to this, that there is an incoming Secretary General of NATO, Mark Rutte. However you pronounce the Dutch here, in just a few weeks, actually. Now, of course, the logic to avoid this kind of intervention is pretty ironclad. People coming in with this new Secretary General might be even less rational than their predecessors. Stoltenberg remains against it, and so long as he's in office, it's not really a worry. But Rutte will learn at some point that it's really not a matter of principle, that NATO has no choice. They don't have the capacity nor the equipment for such action, especially in Poland. Let me quote someone I've quoted here before, Andrew Korbiko, talking about the Polish connection here with this policy of intervening by shooting down Russian missiles, which is a huge issue right now. The sequence of events that would therefore have to transpire in order to turn this into a reality are that Rutte and his team end up being hawkish on the issue, Polish policymakers overcome their differences and agree that it's worth the risks, and the U.S. gives them the green light. And even if the first two are in place, nothing will probably happen unless the third is as well, since Poland is unlikely to feel comfortable acting unilaterally without knowing for sure that NATO and the U.S. has its back. In other words, they'll be abandoned once it becomes too expensive. But we're looking at, with all that, the possibility of a huge military breakthrough by the Russians after now that Pokrovsk has been taken, which would cause a panic, and maybe the idea of shooting down Russian missiles will seem more attractive. But it may make them even more reluctant to escalate like this. A few others have written that if Donald Trump wins the American election, he's promised peace talks between the two countries. And so the left may try to undermine this and sabotage this. Now, there's a lot of ifs in this theory. The election is going to be rigged, and as a result, there is a good chance Trump is going to lose. I also think the politicians don't really matter, and policy is going to remain the same no matter what. But that doesn't take away from the fact you have a terrified, panicked, broken, and irrational regime. We know the Western world is capable of anything, no matter how many die as a result. It may well be that this massive onslaught, this huge Russian victory, may cause the desire for escalation as much as it might discourage it. As of right now, Russian medium-range precision hypersonic missiles are raining down on what's left of Ukraine. Putin did not want to do this. He didn't want the entire country involved. He didn't want to hit important pieces of infrastructure that, by the way, the Russians probably built in the first place. But believe it or not, there are still those, if you just look at the American media, there's still those who think that Kiev can win this. And therefore, the entire universe should ensure Kiev's victory no matter what the human cost. There are those in the EU who still want open war. Again, something never even considered in the Soviet era. And this is true in places where you have a truly pathological anti-Russia, almost a Russophobia, from their controlled media. And you see this in Britain, you see it in the US, you see it in the Baltic states, and in Poland. Now, what Zelensky's doing here, this is a deadly serious issue, because this would be direct Western intervention in this war. But Zelensky has a few things going on. He's trying somehow, despite his very weak position, to pressure Poland into sending everything they have, despite everything that Poland has sent and anyone has sent, largely now destroyed. Even worse, that Zelensky thinks that Poland should sacrifice all of its sovereignty by participating in this planned military union, a different version of NATO without the Americans, so as to increase war production. I'll mention that here in a minute. He wants Poland to go to NATO to permit the interception. But they have plenty, including Kwasniak himself, show that Zelensky is meeting some resistance from Tusk, German-backed liberal government in Poland. Kiev didn't want to hear, though, what the Poles had to say about this. Going back to the start of the war, this war has been used to probe Russian military capacity. And of course, mainstream media is covering up the disastrous results. The sheer amount that Kiev is constantly demanding keeps growing and growing, which indicates the truth of the reality on the ground. Ukraine is a graveyard, the cream of her men, gone or mutilated in the name of liberalism and free trade. It is possible that the regime sees Poland as an alternative to Ukraine, fully aware of the possibility of another depopulation. Back in July this year, 2024, there was a NATO summit in Washington. And a few very discouraging things were said there. Air defense systems all over the place have been destroyed. These are extremely expensive items. The U.S. doesn't have any more. The F-16 disaster that I mentioned, especially as it was a friendly fire incident. Netherlands, Denmark, and the U.S. said that their F-16 deliveries are quote-unquote ongoing, but that's propaganda. But what else are the Dutch going to use the F-16s for? But it can lead to out-of-control escalation. And certain member states, Poland possibly being one, is very concerning. They can lead to real danger. Polish Army Chief, the Chief of Staff, in fact, back in July, Wojciech Kukula, General of the Polish Chief of Staff, openly called for Warsaw to begin preparing its army for war. Not asymmetric warfare, but full-scale war. Now, Poland is hardly a military power. On paper, it could field 100,000. But in reality, maybe 40,000 novice soldiers at any given time. Again, I'll repeat myself, this wasn't dreamed about during the Cold War. But these are irrational and provocative statements. On the other hand, a week later, General Leon Komornicki, who was a former deputy chief of staff of the armed forces in Poland, said to the WNP, state media in Poland, mocked the idea that there was any chance of Kiev winning this. He laughed. He dismissed the very concept that Russia could ever be defeated. He said it's nonsense, an endless and boring story, disinformation and propaganda. Pointing to his own men, the Polish soldiers have zero combat experience. And at this point, direct confrontation with battle-hardened and very well-trained Russian infantry would be a slaughter. And then he said what a lot of people in Europe are thinking, but don't say outwardly, that NATO doesn't have the capacity to come to anyone's aid during a wider war. Supplies have run out. And what's left is going to Israel, not Kiev. Then he said that if Russia were to strike at Poland, Poland would face immediate defeat. Now, Poland has a strong state media. It's tightly controlled, violently anti-Russian. But when you have the former deputy head, a chief of staff, saying this, it kind of cancels out what Kukula said. But there is clearly that faction there. Poland was involved with the Kursk incursion. At least, you know, I've read reports on Russian military blogs that there were Polish-speaking officers there. Now, Kiev creates these ludicrous statistics on how many Russian missiles it shot down. But it's nonsense. They don't have that capacity. They don't have the men. They don't have the equipment. On the other hand, sources about Ukraine's massive casualties from the start of this war are now easily available, easily verifiable. That means any Polish officer demanding open war is knowingly sentencing practically his whole country to a violent and painful death, suggesting that they are either incompetent, controlled by outsiders, or simply diabolical. But Ukraine is doing everything in its power to involve Poland in a direct hot war with Russia. Now, the president, Duda, has made the, in several speeches, has said that Poland has spent 3.3% of its entire GDP on providing all kinds of aid to Ukraine. Now, its defense budget is about 4% of GDP every year, suggesting to me that Polish policy is being set elsewhere, since a small state such as Poland would not divert about $25 billion to a country which, by the way, is historically a rival. He also made the weird claim that Poland sent 400 tanks, despite the fact that their stock of tanks is very old. Its official inventory is that it has 620 of the old Soviet-era tanks. Most of these have been destroyed anyway. But Zelensky still is not satisfied, and this is why I say that he's losing it, and not in a good way. Zelensky said in response to all this, "Today," he said, "the Polish side's attention to our defense capabilities has slightly decreased. I mean, Poland probably gave what it could, and there are probably some things that remain in Poland today. I'm raising one question. There is a specific question. We really need your MiGs, your airplanes." Now, the defense minister, I mentioned before, Kosiniak-Kamysz, responded to this in the state-owned Polish press agency. He said the Polish government, both our government and our predecessors, have donated billions in equipment to Ukraine. That's all we were able to donate. But the security of Poland is always my highest priority, and all decisions we make in this matter are made through the prism of the security of the Polish state. The fact that he has to repeat that, the fact that Zelensky is using this psychological manipulation by saying, well, I mean, Poland probably gave what it could, and then saying, well, there may be some things that remain in Poland. In other words, despite you just putting yourself in a vulnerable position by sending us this ridiculous amount of equipment, all destroyed, by the way, allegedly 400 out of 600 tanks, probably the old Soviet 1970s models. Still, it's not enough. That Hozniak Kamysh will say something like, well, you know, we have to worry about our own defense, and that he actually has to say this in public, suggests that these demands from Zelensky in public may be, you know, exaggerated, but still measured in private, God knows what he's doing. No one in Poland, no one wants to sacrifice her minimum defense needs to not just provoke a war with Russia that there is zero chance it could win, but then being abandoned by NATO, which is nothing new. The U.S. does that all the time. Now, of course, being a NATO country, Poland has its own deep state, full-time bureaucrats and security, foreign and military circles. Tusk represents that leftist globalist faction. The former government still has people around. Yeah, they hate Russia for some reason, more than they love Poland. They're going to remain in the war until the bitter end. Now, the question as to why they would support a centuries-old rival, such as Ukraine, tells me that there's quite a bit of external control here. They've spent most of their existence at war with Ukraine and Russia for different reasons, sometimes at different times, sometimes at the same time. But Zelensky is angry that Poland, despite that it's given a ridiculous amount of equipment to Ukraine, even has its infantry engaging in operations, but we're not willing to start World War III by intercepting Russian missiles. The fact that he is angry at this shows you not only his own personal problems, but the problems of the Kievan state as a whole. I mentioned early on that the strategy in the Kursk expedition was incredibly stupid. Of course it's going to fail to affect Russia's advance in the Donbas. In fact, it actually accelerated its victories in eastern Ukraine. That's why Zelensky is so hysterical. He doesn't care if there's World War III. Somehow this comedian expects that the crisis that would occur in Russia, that somehow this would be so cataclysmic that the Russians will seek concessions and immediate peace talks. Of course, NATO doesn't believe any of this, or they would have approved his insane idea a long time ago. Now, the Belarusian case, it's a different story. Poland would be defeated by the Belarusian armed forces as well. There was some talk about isolating the southeastern city of Gomel, really for the sake of provoking Poland. Of course, the war would be widened, but Ukraine doesn't have the capacity for any of this. Minsk is at high alert. Belarus is more than a match for the Polish army, but that's how far certain factions are willing to go. Now, Corbico and others make the claim that NATO will not escalate any of this unless Poland fully admits to playing a leading role. But its deep state is deeply divided, and probably a majority are against this kind of thing. Yes, they're afraid that NATO won't be able to back them up. Being totally depopulated, though, doesn't seem to be a huge problem. Anything could happen. So, with all of that, with this disaster, Kiev fully admitted the Kursk disaster. I mean, 2 years ago, that would have been inconceivable. Alexander Sertsky said that the objective of the attack was not achieved. He says, and if anyone should know, he should. He said the purpose of the attack was to divert Russian forces back inside Russia again, hence abandoning parts of the Donbas, which is utterly childish. Russia doesn't have manpower problems. Ukraine does. The U.S. does. Of course, Moscow's forces didn't have to be relocated. And it shows you the ignorance of the regime's media trying to present the Kursk failure as a Ukrainian victory. But worse, it shows you what the mentality of people like Zelensky. I mean, to be fair, they're taking orders from a very unhinged president who has no legitimacy, no constitutional power, and zero military experience. So Zelensky says that, in public now, that the operation in Kursk was meant to divert Moscow's attention, forcing them to withdraw men from the Donbass and send them to the northern border. Then, somehow, Ukraine would make territorial gains in eastern Ukraine, or Donbass, facing positions that the Russians would be forced to abandon. How ludicrous is this kind of thinking? Russia today is using about 5% of its military strength there. And that's the level. This is absurd to the highest degree. Somehow they projected their own manpower problems onto Russia. And of course, the exact opposite is what happened. Zelensky also admits in public that the result of the Kursk adventure was that Russia expanded its positions in the Donbass, gaining new territories in this Russian-speaking area, and deploying more troops at critical junctures. But no one could have thought otherwise. Suggests that this is a direct order from the quote-unquote president of Ukraine, who doesn't know anything. Zelensky went on to say, as places like Pokrovsk, elsewhere, parts of western Donetsk, these are key strategic positions for supply lines to places like Zaporozhye. But these too have fallen. Supplies are nowhere to be found. In fact, it was back in 2014 that Kiev was concerned with building military fortifications in these cities, which a buildup which is what provoked the Russian invasion in the first place. Here's what Zelensky said in more detail. I'm quoting him here. One of the tasks of conducting an offensive operation in the Kursk area was to divert significant enemy forces from other places. First and foremost, the towns of Pokrovsk and Kurakovsk. Of course, the enemy understands this too, so it continues to focus its main efforts on Pokrovsk, where its most combat-ready units are concentrated. The enemy is trying to withdraw units from other directions, while in Pokrovsk, on the contrary, it is increasing its efforts. In other words, Kiev's idiotic maneuver was a desperate attempt to prevent, or at least delay, the inevitable Russian victory in the Donbass, which is one of the main goals of their invasion in the first place. Now, as I said before, the point of the American war isn't to win, but to inflict as much damage on civilians in Russia as possible. It's military weakness that would cause such a ridiculous strategy to come about. It's evidence of delusion on the part of NATO, and certainly in Zelensky, the possibility that he is in fact breaking down. So, in Kiev's case, of course, if its forces are attacked in a new place, the most that Kiev can do about it is to withdraw a handful of undersupplied, untrained troops from elsewhere. Kiev, of course, is beyond full mobilization at this point. They have spent all of their military resources and that of most of Europe. But on the other hand, Russia's barely mobilized at all. How can anyone possibly think that Russia would have to withdraw troops from one area to go fight in another one? So not only did Zelensky admit failure, but it also revealed its plans. This is amateur hour. Extremely inexperienced kind of wording. They simply ignored the fact that Russia has thousands of troops available or more, and plenty of equipment, to protect any point on its borders without having to withdraw already mobilized men. But this should have been obvious to anybody. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the Kursk thing, and the Jewish media was just making up one story after another. They said that this was a game changer. We're bringing the war to Russia, and other Rambo-style words. That's the level of these make-believe analysts out there. But Zelensky said this wasn't even the goal of the operation. But the costs were massive. It was Kiev that retreated from Donbass to invade Kursk, leaving key areas of the main front vulnerable and allowing Russia to advance even farther, and possibly ending this thing pretty soon. It was a very high-risk tactic, but it was also an illiterate one. Ukraine is working with very poorly supplied and trained men. And you did have adventurers from the U.S., Poland, and the U.K. The Financial Times reports that the remaining Ukrainians in the Donetsk area have no more artillery shells and even fewer men when the offensive in Kursk began. And that just accelerated the Russian victory. They tried to capture the nuclear power plant just inside of the border, and that failed. And the Russian forces, as they've been doing for a long time, have been pushing back with relative ease. The U.S. clearly was not shocked by the Kursk invasion, like the New York Times says. But then later on, the Times also says that the Americans and Britain provided Ukraine with intelligence, at least as they, you know, cut and ran, tracking Russian reinforcements and trying to coordinate their own retreat, which at the moment is all the U.S. is willing to do. Yes, the war has gone badly since it started for Ukraine, but now it has gotten much worse. The Russians are reconquering Russian-speaking areas in Ukraine. Someone from a German journalist named Julian Ropke said, the Ukrainian military is already mentally preparing to defend the Dnieper. He says this, in other words, abandoning their positions in eastern Ukraine. The people there already despise the Ukrainian government. Fewer and fewer want to fight for that Jewish clique in Kiev. The Kursk incursion, they took one little town of 6,000 people, Suzda. But that very same moment, the Russian army captured five Ukrainian settlements, population of roughly 100,000 just in August. And this is continuing. It's a steamroller at this point. Ropke also says this, the Ukrainian soldiers I speak to can barely comprehend the catastrophe that's unfolding. Territory is sometimes being lost so quickly, it is as if a retreat order had been given. They also consider the rotations that have already been carried out and planned to be too dangerous for holding the front. Now, of course, I said this a while ago, that there is no rotation because there is no reserves. But it's guys like Ropke, who covered over and covered up for this mass depopulation of Ukraine, now they want to seem like they're moving away from their earlier lives. Some of you may have heard what Boris Johnson had to say. This is the same guy that deliberately sabotaged the Russian-Ukrainian peace agreement in Istanbul back in early on. This is March of 22. And Boris Johnson's words have been confirmed by Zelensky's own party, especially the parliamentary leader, David Arakamia. Zelensky, by the way, is calling for legal Ukrainian conscription age to be 17. Boris Johnson and Zelensky are demanding that they engage in more long-range weapons attacks on Russia, which is a terror attack on civilians. Johnson went so far as to say, if I were a general, I could lead the foreign troops against Russia. That certainly reveals what kind of a man he is, his mentality. They're doubling down on their idiocy, because at least for those who are not openly sociopathic, they want to avoid responsibility for the deaths of millions of Ukrainian boys. Zelensky and Johnson are calling for more Ukrainian cannon fodder. They want to bring Ukrainian refugees of military age back from foreign countries, something like 650,000 of conscription age elsewhere. But the Hungarians, the Poles, they've also refuse to send refugees back so long as the war continues. Today is September 10th, 2024. And it's a low estimate that about 1 million Ukrainians have been killed or badly wounded in this ridiculous war. It doesn't count the millions who have PTSD, severe anxiety. This will scar the entire generation of Ukrainians. But for two decades, Kiev waged war against the Russian-speaking regions. Washington controls the country, picks its leaders, drafts its laws. As we said in the beginning, the regime has attacked Ukraine for decades, overturning elected governments, using the country as a golem to break Russia, using this very artificial army to take both Ukrainian and Russian resources. And of course, in the typical sociopathic method of the regime, it's been an absolute catastrophe for everyone in Ukraine, Eastern or Western. Rodney Atkinson wrote in Global Research concerning all of this. Ukraine's infrastructure and energy installations are largely destroyed. The valuable minerals and industrial base in the East has been lost. Millions have fled the country. The youth is being destroyed on the battlefields. The birth rate is catastrophic and corruption is everywhere. In the history books, this period should be known as the Ukraine sacrifice, a sacrifice on the altar of U.S. neocon imperial ideas, German Europe's push to the East, and a decadent British political class without public support, surrendering to Russophobia and leading the rhetorical charge. And he's absolutely right. One of the reasons that these installations in central Ukraine were not attacked early on is because Putin didn't want to destroy them. But with attacks on Russia directly, this was his response. But the regime doesn't care about popular support. No one really wants this. This is pure Machiavellianism. Any debate over this was phony, mediated by the system itself, creating sides that had little knowledge of the area. And in much of Europe, the regime banned all pro-Russian outlets of any kind, even now is arresting well-known journalists who speak the truth on this, which encouraged a far worse crackdown in Ukraine. On September 1st, the 500,000th Ukrainian soldier's obituary was published in Ukrainian newspapers, which I think is a low number. At least that number has been wounded, is declared missing, or a POW. The battlefields are notoriously covered with corpses no one comes to retrieve, images of which never show up in the controlled media in the West. There was a Polish journalist in Kharkov. The Washington Post quoted him saying, "This is actually a cemetery in Kharkov. It seems that there are twice as many graves of killed soldiers as there were exactly a year ago." In other words, the best of Ukraine is being deliberately exterminated, no doubt to be replaced by third world migrants brought into the country by corporate NGOs. Friendly fire incidents are constant. The American Institute for the Study of War says that friendly fire incidents on the Ukrainian side has increased 400% over the last year due to poor training, severe fatigue, mismatched equipment, no overall command or strategy, no competent command or strategy, and the total lack of competent and trained men to work these sophisticated weapon systems. It's a result of constant defeat, high casualties, dreadful leadership, and blatantly illegitimate government. Sersky confirmed that the new force conscripts receives at most 2 months training before being sent to the front to die for BlackRock. And one last thing. I mentioned this in early 2022. Desertion and insubordination are a huge problem in the Ukrainian army, made even worse in the summer of 2024. Men in huge numbers abandon their posts, refuse to fight, or try to go AWOL. In the first 4 months of 2024 alone, Ukrainian prosecutors opened 20,000 criminal cases against deserters. And these are only those that they have any access to. The white ticket, as they call it, to escape the country, to escape army life, it used to cost $5,000 when the war started. Now it's almost $40,000. That comes from Mikhail Yurchenko, a member of the RADA. And that has to be paid to the Ukrainian conscription office. Intensely corrupt institution. Otherwise, it captures men off the street to send to the front. But they will also, for a very high price, give you a white ticket so you can get out. These are not problems Russia has. And this is what happens when the regime gets involved anywhere. But this is absolute, complete genocide. Okay, I've gone on long enough. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.